Hi, everybody. I'm Renee Royack-Shaler, and I would like to dedicate this presentation today to a dear friend who passed away early this morning of breast cancer at age 44 after a seven-year valiant battle with the disease. She leaves a seven-year-old daughter who has known breast cancer and its challenges from the time she was 3 months of age. So to Liz. Today I'm going to be describing to you the development and evaluation of strategies for health following breast cancer, a survival guide for African American women. This particular program, I have no disclosures, the program was developed as an academic community partnership, and many of my colleagues presenting here today have developed their products in the same context. And I would like to acknowledge our community partners who are members of the Sisters Network Baltimore chapter and also the American Cancer Society and, of course, our IT production team at the University of Maryland School of Medicine who were just absolutely excellent. Our goal for this particular program, and it's a web-based educational program, first slide showed the URL for the product, was to deliver evidence-based guidelines for survivorship care. Those are the Institute of Medicine guidelines for cancer survivorship care developed in 2006 in a volume called Lost in Transition, which is an excellent volume if you are not familiar with it. We wanted to instruct survivors, specifically African-American breast cancer survivors, in making risk-based choices about screening, lifestyle modification, chemo prevention as survivors, and to provide them with information about the risks and the benefits of their choices. So as some of you may know, there are special needs and disparities in breast cancer for African-American women. Their mortality is 33% higher. They tend to have more limited access to health care and medical services. Their screening rates are lower. There is a higher occurrence of comorbidities for African-American women, particularly in the area of hypertension and diabetes. And they typically have an unfavorable tumor biology. Some of you may be familiar with triple-negative breast cancer, which is a condition that affects a lot of younger African-American women with poorer outcomes. African-Americans also report less information and opportunities for participatory decision-making during medical appointments than do their Caucasian counterparts. We know from patient-physician communication, much of my research has focused on that during the past 20 years, that individual cancer patients really do differ in their desire for information about primary treatment, follow-up care. They differ in their ability to get information during medical appointments and in their capacity to ask questions, express their concerns, and state preferences. Here are the Institute of Medicine recommendations that were implemented in our web-based educational program. So the IOM recommends that physicians provide the following categories of information to cancer patients, and they are numerous. The main thing that we were very interested in was this idea of a plan of care. So that's the whole focus of our program. Survivors are supposedly given a plan of care by their physician, their medical oncologists, hopefully in team with their primary care providers upon completing their primary care treatment. But all of the preliminary research that we did, which I'll show you in just a moment, basically documented the fact that the majority of survivors don't get this kind of plan of care and really develop their plans of care from information from all kinds of venues. So our conceptual framework was the social cognitive theory and health belief model, and hopefully you're familiar with those two models. We used an empowerment educational approach. So this is an evidence-based approach, which we have used since 1998. All of this information would be available to you. If you were to contact me, that would be absolutely fine. This particular approach includes testimonials, patient-physician vignettes, and educational messages developed in accordance with preliminary data and findings that you do initially as part of the development. So our initial product was Breast Cancer Facts and Fallacies, a guide for African American women, and that was developed through NCI funding in 1998. However, that focused on the early detection side of things. So this particular program looks at informed screening decisions and how you make those, the importance of prompt symptom care, and the importance of knowing how to engage in informed discussions with your doctors about breast health. It also focuses on the importance of a multidisciplinary team approach to breast cancer treatment, which we utilize extensively at the University of Maryland. So what are the unique features of Strategies for Health and the model that we used? It is the academic community partnership, which is critical, and my colleagues here have said that their communities were involved in the development of their materials as well, so we all are in agreement. And the other unique feature of our partnership was the opportunity to train minority medical students and undergraduate students in research in these particular approaches. So typically that's what we do in our projects at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. Our students were trained through a minority student research training program funded by NHLBI. They were trained in the delivery of focus groups, telephone surveys, the process of translation of data to intervention, and educational content development. So what did our implementation look like? In phase one, we did assessment through focus groups and telephone surveys. In phase two, we utilized translation. So data from our phase one was translated into the web-based interactive educational modules, and this was done in educational messages, self-assessments, and testimonials. Phase three involved evaluation, which included feedback from the survivors and also medical oncologists to assess the capacity of our program in particular arenas. And phase four was the modification of the program based on feedback that we were able to obtain. So here are the questions that we looked at in our focus groups. We wanted to know how many people had been actively involved in discussions about decision making in terms of their survivorship care. We wanted to know about the information and instructions that they had received from their doctors, and also whether they even knew about the Institute of Medicine guidelines for survivorship care, their recurrence concerns, and their sources of information for survivorship plans. So this is what our program looks like, and I had planned to show this to you, but we have a little bit of a technical problem, so we'll actually look at the navigation, and I have a CD here. You would have the opportunity to contact us for CDs. We'd be happy to send them to you as well. So you can see what the navigation looks like. And the other person who I want to acknowledge in all of this is actually Faith Ringgold, if any of you know the artist Faith Ringgold. These are some of her quilts that are in the background of a lot of our work here. So you see that here are some questions that operationalize the Institute of Medicine guidelines regarding follow-up care. So here is a woman asking her physician, now that I finished my treatment, who on the cancer team will be responsible for monitoring my care? And this is administered in the context of 8 questions that women can ask and get answers to. We have testimonials, which you'll see in another slide. People have the opportunity to do their self-assessments. They can quiz themselves. And here are, on the left-hand side here, is the navigation that looks at these questions, the Institute of Medicine questions, that looks at healthy behavior, largely diet and physical activity, and is broken into various topics in those particular areas. So our focus group findings, I'm just looking, we're okay time-wise.
At 34, you have 5 minutes.
Okay, very good, thank you. Here are some of our findings from the focus groups, which were conducted with 39 women, mean of 55 years old. We just had a paper to come out in the Oncology Nursing Forum, which actually describes all of these focus groups. Our telephone surveys really wanted to look at, and that was with 100 patients, both African-American and Caucasian patients. We wanted to look at this issue of the delivery of the Institute of Medicine guidelines, and we wanted to know which patients are most likely to receive this information, according to demographics, family history, comorbidity, and their recurrence concerns. And on the other side of the patient-physician communication, dialogue, we wanted to know which patients reported these discussions and whether they were more likely to follow screening guidelines, complete their cancer treatments, follow recommendations in diet and physical activity, and also to demonstrate lower levels of concerns. This is what our model looked like in terms of the telephone questionnaire surveys that we utilized. Obviously, our outcome measure here was perceptions of risk of recurrence or concerns about recurrence, body mass index, and diet and physical activity. Here are the procedures for our telephone surveys. They were 15-minute cross-sectional surveys done at one point in time. Here was the patient population. And our study team, part of our study team, and also some of the data that we were able to collect here. We do have an Institute of Medicine guideline scale, which is operationalized and available to anyone who is interested, with 10 information points. So the range on this particular scale regarding information points that people should be given for survivorship care is 0 to 10. Here are some of our demographics in terms of the breakdown of our patient population. And we did see some differences in terms of health insurance coverage, which is not a surprise. So in terms of the Institute of Medicine guideline discussions, we knew that people who had higher incomes, more education, and greater recurrence concerns would be more likely to receive some of these guidelines discussions. But interestingly enough, we did not find any significant differences in our African-American and Caucasian population, and I think this speaks to our population and our delivery of care at the University of Maryland School of Medicine, which is really, we excel in terms of enrollment of minorities in clinical trials. Our rates are about 35% compared to a national average of around 13%, so we do well in this particular arena. I'm going to skip along in terms of findings overall. So basically what we did was we translated our focus group and telephone survey findings in 7 content areas. Here are the particular content areas that we were most concerned about, with a focus on evidence-based care in all of these areas. And here are some of, actually our testimonials were done by members of the Sisters Network Baltimore chapter, and they talked about their own experiences in key areas, all of the key areas that I described, and they really were full partners in terms of reviewing our product and also critiquing it and going through to modification. We did evaluation focus groups, largely with our patient population that's been described and also members of the Sisters Network Baltimore chapter, and the product was modified on the basis of that. The focus on the evaluation groups was really the importance of tailoring products to comorbidities of cancer survivors, getting information in those areas, basic information regarding dietary change, and tailoring the products overall to meet the variability in terms of years of survivorship, computer literacy, and comorbidities. Extremely important. Here are challenges for patients and physicians. So I just want to briefly mention our next steps. The women made a key point that not everyone is interested in web-based educational delivery. And so our next steps, which are funded by Susan G. Komen for the Cure, is we have expanded our partnership to the National Sisters Network Incorporated throughout the country. There are 40 chapters nationwide. And this is a video educational program that we're in the process of. We're well along into that. It will serve as a training tool for Sisters Network chapters and membership. It will serve to expand the outreach mission on the basis of evidence-based information, which is critical. For the Sisters Network Incorporated, and it will also serve as a patient educational tool in medical oncology offices. And so I thank you very much.
I'd like to take a moment to congratulate all of our winners again. I think another round of applause would be in order. I'm going to give them their certificates.
Questions? I know that the toolkit showed up,
yes.
So if we'd like to pass that around, I know that Leonie would be happy to share that. I've got a question here.
Which did really represent the population of Columbus pretty well, too. So we used a focus group company for the first round of focus groups that helped us recruit the participants. But we had some demographic parameters, age group parameters for the children that they had. They had to be between that certain age, or if they had at least one child in that age group that would typically be using a booster seat. We had, recruited a group of people who used booster seats and those that didn't use booster seats, so we did have some different parameters, yeah.
Other questions? Yes.
I have a question about the coupon for the booster seats. How do you tease that out from the effectiveness of the product?
Well, we kept the distribution or the voucher for the seat separate from the pre-assessment, and that was something that they would get afterwards, and they had to actually collect that at a different time. So we tried to keep, we didn't give the tool and the free booster seat right then and there. They would have had to contact us to get the booster seat, and that wasn't done in an effort to make it difficult for people to get it, but that was done in the effort to sort of keep those things a little bit separate as best we could. We still wanted people to be able to get a seat if they needed one, and we had the resources to provide that seat and the education that would go with it in terms of how to install, how to use it, all that stuff, but we tried to keep it apart from that assessment.
Other questions? Well, I'd really like to encourage people to consider yourself or your colleagues applying for the materials contest. If you're a member of the Public Health Education Health Promotion section, we encourage you to consider what you're working on, and all of the information about deadlines and everything can be found on our website shortly after the conference this year. So thank you so much for coming. I'm sure that people would speak to you individually up here afterwards. And I hope that you have a good rest of your meeting. So thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Very nice. All right.
Very nice. So I think I will actually attempt to retrieve my CV there.
Yes.
Good luck. Here we go. She did.
We have not done much marketing for the website recently. It's marketed through the Sisters Network Incorporated, largely.
Part of what's happened is that
we have moved on to this video educational
site,
pretty much. The other thing is that the funds are gone. So apart from the School of Medicine posting the website, for anybody who's interested, we would love to share the our continuing education office, and she's not in the education office, really want me to write a paper on developing our
education.
So they're pushing on that.
I am so intrigued.
The other thing is that they all have access to evidence-based information because just in working with the Sisters Network Incorporated, we've filmed focus groups with a number of survivors where the process of filming testimonials, we filmed a whole lot of them. We're not doing patient information. They think
I'm sure I've done all kinds of
they can use it in any way that they want, obviously. But our interest in our role is to have them utilize it with groups that they're working with.
Also using the theory, though.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Sure.
Belted in, but it's also important that they not open the car doors.
Just doing like educational, videos and posters and stuff like that, because you're bombarded with that. But maybe, how we're working on the leadership in the hospital, role models, just sort of disseminate the idea. There's one hospital out west, I think it's in Seattle, and I think they were suing it because they pulled out all the stuff. They did everything. They had mandatory vaccinations.
Right. Oh my goodness.
They brought the shot cart to the nurses. They gave them like financial incentives.
Yes.
They were sued for the mandatory thing. They were sued.
They didn't have a vaccination option?
You know what?
I mean, they must not have if they were sued, because I would say,
there's a declination option. For some reason, I thought. I mean, they have to have a way of.
I think you're allergic to.
Exactly.
They have to have that.
There's some sort of way. Yeah. I thought it was a condition of employment, and maybe they did have. Let me go back and check. I know that they were sued, and so people are sort of backing away from that, taking the stick. So they're finding that maybe the carrot would be better.
And one of the things we asked too is we were asking the nurses have to have a problem. And so we were trying to say, what's the difference? Why? The perception was, it's not as serious. And it's so much more turning on me. Like, I'm not going to catch up for my patients.
Right.
My system is good, as opposed to, you could be a vector. And in fact, the ones that worked in, oncology and hematology.
Did seem to be writing
things down saying, I get the flu shot so I don't infect my patients. But so many on the general medicine floors.
Some of them just don't care. you know? I mean, that in some of the focus groups that CDC has done, they've found...
I know you've got to go.
Oh, they have found that, you know, some of those groups are just shocked by the comments, you know, nurse saying age, like, you know, I'm more concerned about my health and my family's health than I am about my
family. And the thing is, it's kind of like they said, you're a vector to your family, too.
Right.
You know, it's
right. Right.
Versus family.
Yeah.
I would love to. I mean, we have like this whole district. This is written off.